Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Lior Schrag, discussing the Jews of Nigeria. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. There have been some very interesting films out early this secular year, or perhaps I just missed seeing them at the end of 2014. Among the late 2014, early 2015 releases were a new film on the Book of Exodus, Exodus Gods and Kings by Ridley Scott, which had great special effects and wasn't so great otherwise. The Stephen Sondheim musical Into the Woods, in quite a wonderful adaptation of the Jewish composer and lyricist Broadway show starring, well, everyone from Meryl Streep to Johnny Depp, and the fine Stephen Hawking biopic The Theory of Everything. And Into That Mix, released in a few cities back on December 25th and across the country last week, comes a film called Selma. It's about Martin Luther King Jr. and the epic march on Selma, Alabama, that capped the civil rights movement of the 1960s and helped lead to the signing of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 by President Lyndon Johnson.
What I need to know right now, what's Martin Luther King about to do next?
Mr. President, Dr. King is here.
Mr. President, in the South, there have been thousands of racially motivated murders.
We need your help, Dr. King. This thing's just gonna have to wait.
It cannot wait.
You got one big issue, I got 101.
Summer it is.
Here is the next great battle.
Selma's the place, and they ready.
Dr. King!
I tell you, that white boy can hit.
You will not tolerate agitators attempting to orchestrate a disturbance in this state.
It is unacceptable that they use their power to keep us voiceless. Those that have gone before us say no more.
As we celebrate Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday weekend, it's helpful to look back to that moment in history, the time of Selma. America was segregated. The South was famously racist. It was a time when the concept of a black American president was an impossible thing to even imagine. Remember that when President Barack Obama was born in 1961, there were Jim Crow facilities all through the American South, and many blacks couldn't vote. There were segregated bathrooms, segregated restaurants, segregated buses, and on, and separate by no means meant equal. And schools throughout the North, that's the North, folks, were also segregated, although less obviously so, but still, with blacks and whites in effect attending different educational institutions of very different quality. In large parts of America, African Americans had to sit in the back of the bus, drink from separate water fountains, use outside toilets, eat in different restaurants, stay in inferior hotels. When Barack Obama was 7 years old, we are the same age, so I remember this precisely, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was shot to death by a white racist, precipitating riots throughout the country. Changes occurred because of the civil rights movement, because of the courage of the marchers at Selma, and while things began to change immediately, it took time for real transformation to take place. Many whites and many Jews went to Selma to march with King, inspired by words of his, as when he wrote, "When Moses walked into the courts of Pharaoh and thundered forth with the call to let my people go, he introduced into history the concept of a God who was concerned about the freedom and dignity of all his children, active in the affairs of men, struggling relentlessly against the forces of evil that beset them, seeking to mold a people who will serve as his children, as partners in the building of his kingdom here on earth." Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel famously wrote in a letter to Dr. King after marching with him arm-in-arm in Selma, "Even without words, our march was worship. I felt like my legs were praying." You know, we Americans are funny about race to this day, But right now, a black man is president of these same United States, and he was elected twice in a row to the highest office in the land, the most powerful position in the world. It is the kind of miracle that, as Obama himself said, proves America is indeed the land of opportunity. But our land of opportunity is also the country of Ferguson, Missouri, of Michael Brown, killed by a police officer in unusual circumstances last summer, of an unarmed New York City man named Eric Garner, killed in a police chokehold after being arrested for selling loose cigarettes. We remain the country of Trayvon Martin, killed with Skittles in his hand, and the nation in which young black men are wildly more likely to get killed by police than those of any other race, save for Native Americans. The statistics never tell the whole story, but according to most studies, if you are an African American male between the ages of 15 and 19, there is a 21 times greater chance that you will be killed by police than if you are white. That is, the death rate for young men from police is more than 20 times higher for blacks than it is for whites. As the father of two young men between those ages, this is a jarring statistic. While violent crime rates in America have been falling steadily since 1990, by the way, no one really knows why exactly. Theories range from our aging population to the reduction in lead exposure in our society. Who knows? But it is still stunning to realize that if you are a black man, you have a vastly greater chance of being killed by a policeman or policewoman than a white man of the same age does. Importantly, the rate of African Americans dying at the hands of police has significantly dropped since the 1960s. It's about a third of the rate in that decade. But it's also clear the rate is still far above the death rate for any other single group except for Native Americans. According to the Torah, each and every human being is created in the image of God, B'Tselem Elohim, to be evaluated on the quality of his or her character and not on the color of his skin. As Dr. King said, we are all equally sacred to God, no matter what we look like. And while we have made enormous progress since the days of Selma, clearly we still have a ways to go before we achieve the dream of a truly colorblind society in America. May this weekend help us reach towards that goal, because God knows we have work to do here. Play us in on this King Weekend morning. Here's a setting of a beautiful passage from the Talmud. Because of my brothers, sisters, and friends, Leman Achai V'Rei'ai, out of the house of God I say peace to you, Shalom Bach. Leman Achai, in a setting by Yitzhak Rosenthal of Shalsheles, sung with the Maccabees.
Leman, Leman, Leman Achai, Achai V'Rei'ai, Achai V'Rei'ai. Adabra, Adabra, Na, Shalom Ba.
Leman Achai V'Rei'ai, sung by the a cappella group Shalsheles and the Maccabees together. Because of my brothers, sisters, and friends, I say peace to you of all races and backgrounds. This is the house of God. I seek the best for you.
Abi Abra Adonai Todaraba. Abi Haru Adonai Todaraba. Hashem tu daraba, oh barokata shenata Torah adonatu daraba.
Hashem tu daraba, barokata shenata Torah adonatu daraba.
Hashem tu daraba, oh barokata shenata Torah adonatu daraba.
We Jews live all over the world and have for 2,000 years. But there are some areas that seem less than obvious for the development of strong Jewish communities. Most of us have heard of the Jews of Ethiopia, but few know of the Jews of Nigeria. Our guest this morning, Lior Schrag, spent time with them, came to know their community and their music. Find out all about it when we come back soon on Too Jewish. We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high school, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
We're delighted to welcome the Two Jewish, our guest this morning. Lior Schrag is an ethnomusicologist at the University of Arizona, an expert, that means, on the music of all kinds of cultures, especially on Jewish music. And he spent about a month with the Jews of Nigeria. Many of you are familiar with various Jewish communities from the people we've talked to or your own knowledge. But I didn't know anything about the Jews of Nigeria. How did you find out about them in the first place?
The first I heard about this Jewish community in Nigeria was actually when I was in Ghana in the summer of 2012. I was there studying the drumming and dancing techniques of the Dagra and Ewe people. And at the same time, a colleague and friend of mine was in the northeastern portion of the country living with and studying with the Sefi Jews in Ghana. Through her, I kind of connected and started to do more research about these Jews in Ghana. You know, the idea had come to me that if this secular music that I'm researching and studying in Ghana is as incredible as it is, I wonder if the Judaism and the Judaism that they practice in Ghana is just this, but with or is
with
is,
better rhythm?
Yeah, basically, yeah, kind of a hipper, less white version of our services. And that kind of set me on my path. And that was 2 years ago. Flash forward to last October, I'm being pressured by the university to look for and kind of focus and hone in ideas for my thesis.
They do that to you, don't they?
They do that. And end up kind of continually coming back to this idea of African Jewry and its relation towards not just the indigenous cultures, but our music as well. And what we grew up practicing and singing in the synagogue.
Well, it's a fascinating area. Our listeners may be familiar, of course, with kind of large Jewish communities, the Jews of Uganda, who've now kind of come to prominence, the Ethiopian Jewish community, so many of whom have moved to Israel now. But to know that there are actually Jewish communities in many of both sub-Saharan and North African and West African countries is surprising to a lot of people.
Definitely, and in communities that people probably wouldn't associate, like Cameroon or Kenya, Mali even.
We will explore the specifics of the Jews of Nigeria when we come back, but how long did you spend about a month with the Jews of Nigeria last time?
Yep. I spent about a month with them. Ideally, when conducting field work, you want to be able to spend as much time as possible to fully immerse yourself and kind of assimilate into their culture and lifestyle. But of course, this past summer, with everything happening politically within the country, it ended up being about a month as kind of the target time to get in and get out and kind of be as efficient as possible with the research.
We will talk about that experience and what their religious experience is, the Jews in Nigeria. We come back with Lior Schrag in just a few moments here on Too Jewish. Now I want to express my thanks. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm glad and grateful that the modest cash awards we started with some 10 years ago have grown into a rather substantial amount with the help of donors like many of you. The Kohan Foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and A. Irma Kohan of blessed memory, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the whole Jewish people. That service can be in one of four areas: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. Our past award winners include some truly amazing people, and we are grateful for the chance to reward them and their fine work. Do you know of someone who could qualify for a Kohan Award in 2015? Or will you consider participating in this work yourself? Please go to our website, www.kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N-award.com, where you can find all the information on nominating and on participating in this great work. And we'll be glad to hear from you. Our goal is to help people who work for the whole Jewish people.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road Office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's twojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as wildly popular Jewish podcasts.
Welcome our Mivina in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Good morning, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
The Asula history lesson today. There's an agency today called the Jewish Agency that we talked about last week. It brings Jews from endangered communities to Israel and educates Jews on the good things about Israel today and inspires people to make Aliyah, to return to Israel. But interestingly, it actually predates the State of Israel. Let's talk about the Sochnut and sort of the whole of that period.
Yeah, Jewish Agency, much known as the Sochnut. And it was actually the agency for the Jewish people in Israel. And it functioned as a government just before the State of Israel in terms of buying lands from, you know, from Arabs or from whomever.
Or Turks or British, yeah, or whoever was selling,
yeah,
them, right?
And establishing new villages and towns and just building the country and doing all kind of hasbara out of the country, you know.
So it's public relations about
public
Israel.
Relation, you know. David Ben-Gurion was sent all over the world, and he was the first, he was the head of the Sochnut, the Jewish agency.
Before, of course, he became
of
the
course,
first prime
before,
minister.
Yeah. So actually, the Jewish agency until May 14th, 1948, you said it's in history class, right? So
it is a history class. Yeah. You got to have dates.
So yeah, so he was actually the Jewish agency functioned as the real government until the establishment of the state and creating the new institutions in Israel, and then the Jewish agency was focused on first on make Aliyah, help Jews all over the world to come to Israel, still helped with all the establishment, not settlement, moshavim, kibbutzim,
yeah,
help
settlements,
like,
settlements, yeah. Although that's taken on a weird word, but you know, all of the settling of the land, the farm villages, everything that helped build a new country.
Yeah, and also help in terms of all kind of educational program. You less hearing about this here, but in Israel, the Jewish Agency known for all the educational programs that are offering, especially kids in the periphery of Israel. That you know. For the
improving their educational qualifications,
improving right. their life, their future, like all
their
kind of these kind
and
of
possibilities,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So you know, it's very funny. The word bureaucracy gets a very bad name because you know it's so complicated. You have to work through it. But if you don't have a bureaucracy, you don't have a country. You can't function. So the Sochnut was really the bureaucracy before the country.
And we are still complaining
about
the Sochnut being there. Yeah, but we are thankful, you know, thankful for
We're
having...
We're grateful for the problem
grateful.
Of bureaucracy
Nahon.
In Israel.
Right.
Oshron, thank you for explaining that to us. By the way, the building in which it was housed is still there in Jerusalem. It's a big building. It's still a government building. But that was sort of the predecessor to creating all the institutions of the state of
Nahon,
Israel.
Keren Kayemet, Keren HaYesod, and the Jewish Agency.
Right, all right there. Thanks, Ashrat. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke. Tell us about your product, Freedom Smoke.
Hello, Rabbi Kohan. A pleasure to be here again. Electronic cigarette industry has been around for years. Our product, one of the best things that we've done to improve it, is the base ingredients for our product are brought in from outside of this country. The only place in the world certified kosher.
Kosher, smokeless, no tobacco, and a variety of health advantages. Do you have a lot of former smokers that have kind of quit because of Freedom Smoke?
Absolutely. We have several people who have written to us as well as told us on a personal basis.
How many flavors are there of what you sell?
Over 700.
And when people walk in the store and they don't know what to do, what do you tell them?
We start them off by finding out what they smoke and how much they smoke. We then set them up with the nicotine level that's appropriate for them, and we find the correct flavor, and that's all that it takes.
How do people find your stores?
They can find us on the internet, of course, freedomsmokeusa.com. We have a toll-free number, 800-705-7013. Word of mouth is really good for our company, bringing people into our stores.
And it's kosher.
That's correct. Yep.
We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, there was a terrible shooting in Paris at the office of the satirical magazine. We have seen these kinds of attacks, often on Jewish targets, but not solely on Jewish targets, in many westernized democracies with free presses. Is there a vulnerability in a free society to these kinds of terror tactics?
Well, first of all, let's make it clear that the perpetrators of such attacks are not always or exclusively Muslims. I think we always tend, or many of us tend, to leap to the conclusion that, oh, it's Islamic extremists once again. Whereas, in fact, it can be, particularly in Europe, members of far-right groups, neo-Nazis, other extreme rightists, neo-fascists, whatever.
And other extremists, separatists, Basque separatists, you just, you know, any
right.
group
Although
has an agenda.
The Basque terrorists have largely renounced the use of terror.
Thank God.
But yeah, a few decades ago, that was true. And actually, one of the more articulate condemnations of this attack, which I heard, was written by a Basque friend of mine and posted in both Basque and English. So it's funny that you should mention that. You know, a couple comments. One, much of the world is uncomfortable with the idea of freedom of expression, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, a pluralistic society in general. So we have this vision as, you know, the leading country of the Western world, in quotation marks, whatever that means. And we tend to see ourselves as the world's policemen, moral and political and otherwise. We have this vision that pluralistic democracy that ensures basic freedoms is the best model of society for everyone. And because we're fairly convinced of that, we have a hard time understanding the mindsets of people who don't agree, basically, and who attack precisely those basic freedoms and use those basic freedoms, which we work so hard to guarantee in the Western world, as chinks in our armor. Or as points of vulnerability and points of access, you know, ease of travel, ease of access to information, ease of access to means of mass communication, et cetera, gives extremist groups access. And they may use that access in a variety of ways. Unfortunately, it seems that the angriest and most extreme of these groups use that access to perpetrate acts of terror and violence and really senseless, bloody attacks, which might be the only way that somebody who's not a product of a system like ours and who doesn't understand freedom of expression has to express themselves. If you think about different languages for expressing political beliefs and religious beliefs, in a society where these things are not debated, where there aren't editorials and op-ed pages and things like that, might not occur to somebody to write an article or make a speech. Might occur to someone that the only recourse they have, the only means of expression, is a bomb or a shooting. So I'm not advocating sympathy with the attackers.
Thank you. Yeah, I was wondering about that.
But I am trying to help your listeners understand mindsets of people who come from societies very different from our own.
Yeah, a challenge and a continuing challenge. I think sometimes it's a shock to Westerners how completely out of tune we are, or other societies, other peoples are with us.
Right.
We'll talk next week. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, I'm Ben. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can help provide a Jewish education to families at no cost to you by redirecting your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. You can help make Jewish education affordable.
Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. This lets JETCO give scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction or donation. When you give to JETCO, you get 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income taxes are reduced by the exact amount you've given. Supporters of JETCO can give up to $1,053 for a single filer or $2,106 for a married couple filing jointly and get that whole amount back from state income tax.
Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or you can go to JETCO.org.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Erwin and Murray celebrated selling their raincoat business by going on safari to Africa. One night in the jungle, they were frozen in their tracks by an ominous low roar. "Murray," quaked Erwin. "I heard." "Shah, look behind me. Tell me, what do you see? A lion? A tiger? A leopard?" "I should know," moaned Murray. "What am I, a furrier?" Yes, that was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week, our people gets out of Egypt. Or to be more accurate, we chant the Torah portion of Bo, which includes the description of the actual exodus from Egyptian slavery and the establishment of the rites and rituals of the observance of the Passover. The build-up to this week's Parsha has been steady and dramatic. Plague has followed plague, 10 of them, of course, rising in severity as the one God overcomes the long roster of Egyptian gods and idols and frees the people of Israel from their long night of oppression and slavery. Finally, in Bo, our ancestors become a free people. Since we are now liberated, you might expect us to immediately cast off the memory of oppression and enslavement and move on to new and better things, to reject our history of degradation. But, oddly, God, through Moses, commands us to do quite the opposite, to remember the slavery and how we were freed only by God's great acts. And from this point on, we are reminded repeatedly in the Torah to remember those in our own society who are oppressed, to help them, because after all, we ourselves were slaves in the land of Egypt. You were strangers in a strange land, we tell ourselves repeatedly in the Torah. Therefore, recalling our degradation, we must help the oppressed and the strangers in our own land. You know, I can think of no other people or nation that spends so much effort remembering how humble its origins are. Unlike many other national myths, we Jews do not highlight our ancient and sacred pedigree or our divine origin. Instead, we remind ourselves again and again that we are descendants of slaves who had nothing to call their own. Even on holidays that have nothing to do with the Exodus or the story of freedom, we include the memory of our slavery and liberation. Every Kiddush on every single Shabbat includes the phrase that we are celebrating, Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, recalling the Exodus from Egyptian slavery. The message is powerful. We are to recall the fact of our own oppression so that we will identify with those in our own world who need our help. The Sedra of Bo teaches us that we must seek always to redeem the world through our own action. Our connection is with the lowly. Our efforts to heal the world come from the knowledge that we ourselves have come up from exactly that kind of background. It's a profound lesson in humility that leads directly to charity, tzedakah, and the promulgation of righteousness in the world. Even in challenging times, perhaps especially in challenging times, we must remember those who are oppressed and who have less than we do. And no matter how much we rise in the world, no matter how influential or powerful our people may become or our Jewish nation may be, we are always to identify with those who have less and need our help. To celebrate the Exodus experience in this week's Torah portion, which lies at the heart of our Jewish identity, here's the Passover Psalm, when Israel came out of Egypt from Safam.
Bet Yaakov me'am Elohez Haita Yehuda likadsho Yisrael mamshilotav Hayam Rahav Hayanos Hayardini sov le'achor Beharim rakidu chayelim Yevaot kivenet sov Hayam kitanus hayarden tisov le'achor Heharim tirkedu chayelim Gevaot kivenei tzon Milifnei adon chuliarets Milifnei eluch hayakob Ahofi hatzur akamayim
Our Jewish poetry slam this morning is on this theme. It comes from Harvey Shapiro. It's called Exodus. When they escaped, they carried a pack of bones in a mummy coffin like an ark. Of course, they had the pillar of clouds by day and fire by night, but those were like dreams or something painted on the sky. God was in the bones because Joseph had said, God will remember you if you take me hence. This was before the miracle of the sea or the thundering mountain, before the time of thrones and cherubim. They were only now drawn forth to eat the history feast and begin the journey. Why then should they carry history like an ark, and the remembering already begun? The poem Exodus from poet Harvey Shapiro. When we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, our guest Lior Schrag will explore the culture, music, and history of the Jews of a fascinating and little-known Jewish community, the Jews of Nigeria. Find out just how they came to be Jewish, learn about their religious life today, all that when we come back in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Batsheva Appel.
This is the Too Jewish news of Jews around the world. Last week, after the terror attack on Charlie Hebdo, the French satire magazine that took the lives of 12 people, including members of their editorial staff and two police officers, there was a hostage standoff in a kosher supermarket in Paris on Friday afternoon as people were preparing for Shabbat. Four hostages were killed. As the events unfolded, the mood on social media went from people saying, "Je suis Charlie," to "Je suis Juif." French Prime Minister Manuel Valls made the statement that France without Jews is not France. Despite promises of increased security, the rate of Aliyah has been steadily increasing and is seen as being likely to double in the coming year. France is the European country with the largest population of Jews, but during 2014 there were increasing numbers of anti-Semitic incidents, spurring people to immigrate to Israel. Philippe Braham, Johan Cohen, Yoav Hatab, and François-Michel Saada, the four terror victims from last week's standoff in the kosher market, were laid to rest in Jerusalem this week. Thousands attended the funeral. In the United States, Rabbi Jonah Pesner will serve as the director of the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism, the Washington, D.C. advocacy and social justice arm of North America's largest Jewish movement. Rabbi Pesner, an accomplished advocate with broad experience leading social justice campaigns, comes to the RAC with a mandate to deepen its advocacy work while mobilizing the Reform Jewish community and its allies. He succeeds Rabbi David Saperstein, who served as director of the RAC for 40 years, building it into one of the most influential religious advocacy institutions in Washington, D.C. Rabbi Saperstein stepped down following his confirmation as the U.S. Ambassador for International Religious Freedom. Rabbi Pesner will assume the role of director of the Religious Action Center beginning immediately. He will also continue to serve as Senior Vice President of the Union for Reform Judaism and will play a key role in infusing the work of social justice throughout the Reform movement. This is Rabbi Batsheva Appel, and this has been the Too Jewish News of Jews Around the World.
to play our guest back in, here's a bit more of the music of the Jews of Nigeria, the Igbo Jews of Abuja.
Abi Abra Adonai Todaraba, Abi Haru Adonai Todaraba, Hashem Todaraba, O Barokata Shenata Torah Adonai Todaraba.
We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Lior Schrag. He's an ethnomusicologist at the University of Arizona who spent time with the Jews of Nigeria. And we talked a little bit broadly earlier, Lior, about the fact that their Jewish community is kind of scattered all over Africa in countries we don't normally associate with Jewish populations. Tell us about the Jews of Nigeria, where they came from, how they ended up being Jewish in an area which is obviously not so Jewish.
So the Jews of Nigeria have one of the more fascinating histories in terms of migratory routes and transmission of knowledge and kind of everything that you think of when it comes to this broader subject of there are Jews in Africa. basically, the country of Nigeria, in terms of its Jewish population, can be divided into two regions. The Jews inhabiting the capital city, which is called Abuja, and then Jews living in the southeast of the country, or as it's referred to as Igbo land. The Igbo are the third largest ethnic group in Nigeria, ranging from about 40 to 50 million, preceded by the Hausa and then the Yoruba. Of those 40 to 50 million, between the two regions, both in the capital city of Abuja and in Igbo land, it's estimated that there are around 30,000 practitioners of Judaism.
30,000.
And the number jumps out at you, certainly. It seems almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, obviously, 40 million, 50 million is a large ethnic minority, but 30,000 Jews, for example, that's the size of the Jewish community of Tucson.
Right, and what you're talking about is
a good-sized American community, actually.
Right, exactly. And you know, a figure like that in the world's largest black nation is outstanding, especially given everything that's been happening in the country religiously and politically within the past even 20 years. You know, you talk about the genocide attempted on the Igbo as a greater culture, not just Igbo Jews, but the Igbo only, you know, even 10 years ago, and now with Boko Haram and the radical groups starting to emerge.
The really radical, I mean, radical doesn't quite capture it, but the almost insane terrorism of Boko Haram. So there's still 30,000, or there are 30,000 Jews. Which part of Nigeria exactly?
So Abuja is located almost directly in the center of the country. And Igbo land is in the southeast, or as everyone in Abuja refers to it as the east, kind of colloquially. But it's in the southeastern coast and part of the country. Nigeria, of course, being located in coastal West Africa.
So how did 30,000 Jews end up in this largest Black African country?
So there are kind of a bunch of different migratory theories that are associated with the Igbo. The most kind of widely adopted and believed is through the sons of Yaakov, God and Dan. And God had three sons, and through those three sons, traveled and settled in what is now southeast Nigeria or Igbo land. And what's right off the bat as a wonderful kind of eerie coincidence is that the three main cities in Igbo land are variations of those three sons' names.
Really? So maybe the 10 lost tribes weren't completely lost, and
maybe
two
not.
Of them ended up in Nigeria. So that would put it, you know, back to First Temple times or something like that, meaning they were separated for a long time from the general flow of Jewish community life, kind of like the Ethiopian Jews.
Yes.
Probably never had the Talmud. Let's bring us up to date a little bit more. There are, of course, famous stories of medieval travelers. Eldad Haddani comes to mind from the Danites, supposedly from Africa also. Bring it up to sort of contemporary not just ethnomusicology, but contemporary anthropology. What do we really know about who they are now and how they practice Judaism?
Absolutely. So even winding back just a couple centuries ago, we know that Nigeria was colonized by the British. And in doing so, came a religious reformation throughout the whole country. And these all cultures, not just these transplanted Jews
in
Igbo land and in Nigeria, but the whole country were kind of newly adapted practitioners of Christianity, and that kind of stuck for a very long time.
Protestant Christianity, some version of Anglican Christianity.
Yeah.
Okay.
And because of that, most of their roots kind of fell to the wayside, and especially a lot of the history, of course, back then was undocumented, and really no way for them at the time to trace kind of what was happening. And once they became colonized, everything kind of just fell to the wayside and fell off. Fast forward years later, an Anglican missionary by the name of George Thomas Basden was coming through doing some historical and anthropological work, tracing the migratory patterns of some of these communities, and basically ended his search in Nigeria, in Igbo land, and went around basically kind of, amongst other things, in informing the people, especially specifically the Igbo, that their roots were in fact with ancient Israel. And here are the reasons why, and kind of going around re-informing and kind of making the Igbo population aware to their roots and history. And that was kind of the spark that set it all off, if you will. Since then, the Jewish communities in both regions have flourished in the sense that they're up to around 25 active and practicing synagogues in the whole country.
How many in Abuja?
Four in Abuja.
So four in Abuja and the other 21 scattered around Igbo land?
Yes.
Fascinating. So what's Shul like? What's the synagogue experience like when you go into a Nigerian synagogue? I mean, I can tell you, you know, Ethiopian synagogues were very different in Ethiopia than they are now that they've sort of assimilated into Israeli culture. What are the synagogues like in Nigeria?
Well, without speaking too generally, because one of the really fascinating things that I found in my research is that each synagogue kind of has its own individual, unique spin on music and on Nusach, both liturgical and Smirot.
So Nusach, of course, the musical framework of Jewish prayer, and Smirot, the songs we use for Shabbat that are not necessarily the prayers themselves, but beautiful songs to enhance the experience.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So it's kind of hard to speak generally about the music for all of these four communities.
So are they all really different?
In terms of music, yes. In terms of Judaic practice, not so much. The greater Abuja Jewish community as a whole identifies most intensely, if you will, with the Orthodox route of Judaism, which might surprise some people.
Well, unless I found a Chabad in Abuja, which wouldn't surprise me, actually. But it doesn't entirely, it's not such a surprise because outside of the places where, for example, the World Union for Progressive Judaism or Reform Movement has spread or Conservative Movement has spread, in particularly in Latin America, the default is always Orthodox. So is
right.
It the same sort of approach?
Sort of. I also think that one of the main factors and reasons why the Abuja Jews kind of jump at this idea of Orthodoxy is because it's what's most relatable towards their original indigenous Igbo practices and their original Igbo religions and customs. One of the things that I talk a lot about in my research and has already been researched upon is this idea of parallels and kind of inherent shared customs between the Igbo, not the Igbo Jews, but the Igbo and ancient Israelites. And there's a wonderful text put out by an Igbo author and historian and lawyer named Remy Olona, where he goes through customs from birth all the way through up until death, essentially charting and drawing the parallels and similarities between original Igbo customs and Jewish customs.
Fascinating. Well, can you give me an example of some of the Igbo customs that seem to be Jewish in origin?
Absolutely. And one of my favorites, because I think it's just the most shocking and truly, you know, leads to believe that maybe, you know, they are not as lost as we originally thought they were, right, is the idea of Brit Milah and circumcision. As your listeners and you know, the Brit Milah is one of the singular most important.
The first Jewish mitzvah, the
right,
first Jewish
of course,
commandment, right? Eighth day, so forth.
Right, on the eighth day and symbolizing the covenant between Abraham and God. Completely independent of this, the Igbo, since their inception as an ethnic group, have been practicing ritual circumcision on the eighth day. This is even more so unbelievable in a country, and not just a country, but a region that circumcision is not practiced.
Pretty much say a continent, I mean, sub-Saharan Africa, in
right,
general, almost the whole continent.
So you have this one subculture that's been practicing ritual circumcision on the eighth day, mind you, since the beginning of their, you know, time.
Consciousness of themselves as a people, wow.
You know, it really, really makes you think.
That sure does. Are there other practices that also kind of connect in this way? I mean, that really is extraordinary.
Absolutely. The Igbo have this tradition that revolves around a kola nut. And it's a small walnut-shaped nut, very bitter in taste and purplish in hue. And the nut is regarded as a very ritualistic and religious artifact. And it's eaten similarly as we Jews make the blessing and eat challah before meals or say kiddush. The kola nut is praised and blessed upon before a lot of activities. And there's a blessing said and then libation of sorts. But one of the most interesting uses of the kola nut are directly in the morning when they wake up. They praise the kola nut and then they thank for being able to wake up and being roused from their sleep, which sounds like modeh ani lefanecha.
Absolutely. Right out of Jewish practice, although we don't have a kola nut so
we don't.
Much. Well, I'm beginning to wonder, maybe it's Kiddush is on the wrong beverage. Maybe it should be on Coke.
Colon up is spelled with a K-O-L-A,
yeah, yeah,
by
I
the
know.
Way.
It's not the same
yes.
thing. But still, it was a good chance to get a joke in. Let's talk musically a little bit.
Absolutely.
Can you give an example? I mean, can we expect a big influence of Nigerian Jewish music into contemporary practice? What do they do that's different? What's beautiful about what they do?
So, of course, speaking only about the musical output of the Abuja Jewish communities, it's really, really interesting. Their music isn't solely inherently West African. It's not solely American modern Jewish, and it's not solely Christian. It's kind of this incredible amalgamation of all of their influences and current aspirations, if you will, all rolled into this one really, really original kind of unique sound that, speaking in terms of harmony and melody, it really is something I've never really heard before.
Have you recorded, did you record some of that, and can we, you know, have a chance to hear some of that sometime soon?
So when I made field recordings when I was there, they were for the purpose of my research and transcription.
Okay.
So they were not professional recordings done, only done well enough so that I could hear them and then transcribe, of course, to then analyze. However,
right.
In 2010, a man by the name of Jeff Lieberman, who's a filmmaker from Los Angeles.
Who might be Jewish with a name like Jeff Lieberman.
He is Jewish. A Jewish filmmaker from Los Angeles traveled to Abuja and the Igboland communities to record a documentary that since then been released and is fantastic and a wonderful introduction and kind of insight towards Igbo Jewish culture as well as music. And along with the DVD, he released a CD as well, which is out in public domain for purchase.
And we will hear a cut from that at the end of the show today, just because you just gotta. I want to thank Lior Schregler. How was it possible for you to go on this remarkable field expedition? Tell us a little bit about what makes that possible.
So I was fortunate enough to receive a grant and a fellowship from the Arizona Community Foundation. I was the winner of the 2013 of the Northern Trust Piper Enrichment Foundation Award. And through them and also the Medici Fellowship Foundation at the University of Arizona, I was very fortunate to be able to accommodate my travel expenses, housing, and most importantly at the time, security. Originally, the hope and the idea was to stay in the communities and villages, living with host families, being as close to the culture as possible. But due to the events of the time, it was decided both by myself and by advisors at the university that more secure housing was necessary. And so truly, without the support and help of the grant associations, I would not have been able to make this trip possible.
It's a great story, and it sounds like there's a lot more that we can learn about these really unusual, really remarkable Jewish communities. Thanks, Lior, for a great visit here on Too Jewish.
Thank you so much.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out from the Jews of Nigeria.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. and even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the... at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Bernard Otterman, a Holocaust survivor and the author of Inmate 1818 and other stories. Our playout this morning comes from another African Jewish community, the Abu Yudaya Jews of Uganda. It's their version of Adon Olam, the concluding hymn for Shabbat services. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Adoni Olam, Asher Lu Malacha, Adoni Olam, Asher Lu Malacha, Biterem Kol. Yasiru nivra, vihetsi nase, biefa zukura. Azai mereha, shimo nikira, vehaharei kihalati hakol. Levado, imalu hanra.